types of ICU can be neonatal intensive care unit for neonates who are up to 1 year of age, up to say 4 weeks of age, infants are up to 1 year of age. Pediatric intensive care unit is for children, usually up to 12 years of age, up to 18 one can admit. Surgical intensive care unit for post surgeries and pre surgeries, acute abdomen, and ICCU intensive coronary care unit is available mainly for cardiac patients in case of myocardial infarctions, left ventricular failure, cardiac failure cases, etc. Now, as far as the staff is concerned, administrator is the overall in charge of this ICU, and there is a committee for ICU taking care of all the ICU functions. Medical staff, intensivists and various specialists and super specialists will be there, and nursing staff who are very essential for taking day to day care of nursing care of these patients who are critically ill. Nurse patient ratio in the morning staff should be 1:1 for every patient in the ICU. One nurse should be there in the morning shift. Evening shift you can have 1:2. For every 2 patients you can have 1 nurse, and for night shift for 3 patients you can have 1 nurse. Now, what are the physical facilities required in ICU? Location, it should be close to OT, because many times the post surgical critically ill patients are there who require special care because they are vulnerable to infections. Their anesthesia level is still not completely weaned off, and hence they need specialized care. Then recovery rooms, post-surgical recovery room, or any other acutely ill patient is there. Then easy access to emergency, it should be near the casualty, because at casualty usually critically ill patients are likely to come. You should be able to give respiratory therapy in the form of ventilator, in the form of lung physiotherapy, surgery, pathology, radiology, all these things should be available nearby, because anytime patient may require these services. Bed strength should be at least 6 cots for them, up to 20 you can have in a hospital. Patient space minimum should be 15 square feet of clear area should be there for each and every patient who is admitted. Nursing call, two-way communication should be available so that immediately they can take care of the patient. Hand washing should be there near patient bed area, and the antiseptics lotion should be available so that whenever a patient, medical, paramedical patient, person or a visitor is entering, he should be having thorough antisepsis to prevent infections, because the patients in ICU are very vulnerable to develop infections. Patient services, you can have pipeline gases like oxygen, compressed air, and electric sockets should be available for 5 amperes as well as 15 amperes, because various electrical equipments will be needed to take care of these patients in the form of ECG for ECG recording, can be EEG in case of psychiatric problem, neurological patient, can be medical suction required to remove the secretions, and so many other equipments in the form of pacemaker putting or some of the other things required for various kinds of patients. You need 5 and 15 ampere different kinds of plugs available, sockets available. Lighting, it should be non-reflecting so that the glare doesn't occur and doesn't come in the eye of the patient or the staff. Around 25 to 30 lux, and in case of active treatment to be given, it can be up to 150 to 200 lux. and there should be sufficient light for doctors and nurses room. Temperature should be 60 to 70 degree Fahrenheit so that it is comfortable to the patients. Noise levels should be quite low, that is up to 50 decibel only, so that patients do not have any irritability due to high noise and all. And humidity should be around 50 to 60%, so that not too much of sweating is there. Electricity should be round the clock with UPS available, so that, and inverters available, so that there is voltage fluctuation also is not going to adversely affect. And in case of power failure, even the ICU equipments are not going to conk off, and there should be a standby generator available. Medications, you should have all the essential drugs, IV fluids, refrigerators for storing blood products, and some of the injections which require low temperatures for preserving their efficacy. And there should be proper standard operating procedure for all the procedures to be followed in ICU, and proper inventory control also should be there, so that at the last moment there should not be any shortage of emergency drugs or any other supplies or equipments, because it's a very critically ill patients are going to come here, and even for a fraction of a second some of the important equipments, if they are not functioning or if oxygen is not available to the patient, it will lead to a major problem. There should be an isolation room also for some of the acutely ill patients, especially HIV patients or some communicable disease patients. There should be storage area available for having all the housekeeping and other supplies to be taken care of, thereby the proper cleanliness, hygienic environment with proper air supply also is there, proper ventilation is there. What are the equipments required? One is monitoring equipments in the form of ECG, in the form of cardiac monitor, in the form of Stella machine, which gives us even the blood pressure of the patient, so pulse oximeter, where pulse and oxygen saturation is known. Arterial blood gas analysis should be able to do at the bedside. Blood sugar, you should be able to see the various parameters based on the type of disease or the patient is suffering. So all the monitoring equipment should be available. Therapeutic equipments also should be there, so cardiac monitor, pulse oximeter, ECG, ultrasonography, 2D echocardiography. Therapeutic equipments in the form of ventilator to provide oxygenation, to provide respiration to the patient who is not mechanically able to breathe on his own. Nebulizer for those who are suffering from bronchial asthma, especially acute on chronic or acute bronchial asthma. Laryngoscope to see if there is any foreign body in the larynx, or even to do the tracheostomy, endoscopy, the endotracheal tube passing, you need laryngoscope. Bronchoscope to know if there are any foreign bodies in the bronchi, or there are any secretions or any other problems which is obstructing the airways. Endoscope to find out if there are any polyps, any hemorrhages, any other problem. And ventricular defibrillator to give electric shock whenever the patient's ventricular rate has gone beyond 300 and all. Diagnostic equipments will be in the form of endoscopes to examine if there are any polyps, any cancerous growths or anything. ECG machine, X-ray machine, which will be portable, and ultrasonography machine to regularly monitor patients. Instruments, tracheostomy set should be there, available all the time, so that in case of any obstruction to the respiratory passage, in case of ventilator to be given to the patient, at times patient requires tracheostomy. Cut open set for IV line, centralized IV line when you want to give cut open set should be ready. And pacemaker attachment set also should be ready. There should be set ready for ionotropes to be given in the form of dopamine, etc. Now let's understand the various kinds of inpatient services where patients are going to be admitted in the wards. They do not require the intensive care, but at least they require accommodation, they require the services which they are not able to manage at home. So it's to provide accommodation for patients at the point of an illness when dependence on others is highest. Now the components of IPD are, you should have a separate nursing station where all the equipments for nurses are there, monitoring things are there, their stationery is there to write down, the IV fluids are there. Then there are beds which are arranged in various ways based on the type of ward that is there. The necessary services and storage work, you should have the right kind of storage for drugs, for supplies, for housekeeping things, for various things available. Public areas which are needed to carry out the nursing care. So these are the components, and let's understand some of the functions of inpatient department. To provide the highest quality of medical as well as nursing care, as we know, the ward has come basically by the main important thing in that is nursing care. As we have seen in the first lecture also, in the history of a hospital we have seen, it was Florence Nightingale who was basically a nurse and who has started the inpatient services to be given to the patients at the time of war, where Nightingale ward has become famous. And so to provide highest quality of medical as well as nursing care of these patients is a very important function for IPD. Then to provide essential equipments required for treating the patient, maybe in the form of ECG, in the form of dressing materials, in the form of EEG, suction, oxygen, etc., or some surgical equipments for doing some dressings and all, suturing, etc., or some bedside procedures to be conducted, for example, pleural aspiration, where pleural tap is required, where there is a pleural effusion, or ascitic tap, where there is ascitic fluid which has been accumulated in the abdomen of a patient in the peritoneal cavity. And there are some medicines which are regularly required by various patients based on the illness, and some other materials which are required for patient care. Then to provide comfortable environment for the patient, for eating, for sleeping, for toilet facilities, etc. To provide facilities for visitors who are coming so that they can also sit on a chair or a stool by the side of the patient, and if required they can have PCO facility or a toilet facility for themselves. To provide highest degree of job satisfaction to your employees in the form of your doctors, nurses, other paramedical staff and all. You should be meticulously maintain all the medical records of the patients, let it be the patient's basic information of name, age, sex, address, phone number, etc. Secondly, the doctor's records in the form of the patient's symptoms, signs, examination findings, the investigations, asked for their reports, the medicines, any operations done, then operative notes, the provisional diagnosis, the final diagnosis, the progress of the patient on a day-to-day case basis, the vital signs of the patient, temperature, pulse, BP, etc. And all the detailed medical records should be kept so that in future, if you want to do any research also, it will help. And otherwise, in case of medical negligence case also, you will be having all documentation ready with you, which will help you in preventing being punished by compensation, etc., by the patient. To provide opportunity for education, it should also provide opportunity for education of doctors by the bedside clinic, in a way, for all the interns, for the housemen, registrars, lecturers, the consulting doctors who are going to teach them bedside. Then For research also it's going to help us a lot in the field of medicine, nursing as well as hospital administration. Now let's understand how you are going to plan and design the war. The factors should be to be taken into consideration are first hospital policy. What is the policy of the hospital for indoor patients to be admitted? Whether those who have come to OPD only should be admitted, or whether the visiting doctors can directly admit the patients in the hospital ward under their name, or whether only the administrator's signature is required to be taken by the patient's relative when the patient is getting admitted. So based on the hospital policy, what is the space requirement of the indoor patients based on the number of beds you have got, how much area you have got for the hospital, what are the various functions of various people, medical as well as paramedical, what is the work plan throughout the day for these people, what is the location, if we see it should be away from the main roads and away from OPD because lot of chaos is there, lot of overcrowding is there in OPD and there can be lot of noise in the on the roads of the vehicle pollution etc. So it should be away from roads and OPD. There should be defined workflow, how the patient will come, what are the standard operating procedures for a patient to be admitted, what are the records to be maintained, how when he will be discharged, what are the discharge papers to be given in what format, who should sign that paper, everything should be defined. So you should have a proper workflow, and once the patient enters the ward, how he is going to be kept on a bed, before that what are the procedures to be taken care of by the medical as well as paramedical staff. There should be interdepartmental relationship also, so that patient can be taken care of and all the services can be coherently and coordinatedly maintained for the benefit of the patient. Traffic flow, there should be horizontal circulation up to 300 beds, but it should be more vertical if there are more than 300 beds, that means it should be the many number of floors should be there, and different kinds of wards can be kept on different floors. You should know how many staffs are required for giving indoor services in a hospital, and there should be proper communication, horizontal communication, vertical communication between various staff, medical, paramedical, administrators, PRO, casualty medical officer, etc. And you should be able to utilize all your services optimally to give the best kind of care to all the indoor patients admitted in your hospital. Now let's learn about what are the various forms of indoor wards available all over the world. First and foremost, as I told you, is the Nightingale ward, which was designed by Florence Nightingale. Then came the Ricks pattern, then came the modified Ricks pattern, then there is a racing track ward, T-type and Y-shaped ward where the nursing stations are at both the sides, and then on the center there are all the cots, and even Y-shaped ward was organized. Then there is a single straight corridor ward, throughout that only one single straight corridor is there. Then there is a L-shaped ward where the cots are organized in L-shape. Then there is cruciform plan where the cots are in the form of X. Then there is a ward where H-shaped ward is also available. E-shaped plan is there. Box plan is there at the corners and all, and central corridor with multiple rib pattern is also there, like fish bone you can say. Now what are the advantages and disadvantages of some of the commonly used wards we'll learn. First let's learn about the Nightingale ward. Some of the characteristics of this Nightingale ward are: patients' beds are in two rows at right angle to the longitudinal walls where the bathroom and WC are at the one end, nursing station, doctor's room, other facilities are at the other end. Length of the ward is usually around 96 feet and usually around 30 to 35 patients are there in the ward. So around 30 to 35 beds are going to be there. This kind of Nightingale ward pattern is right from 1925 we are using this, and gradually some more modifications were done in this, and then bathrooms and isolation rooms were also added to it. Then subsequently what they did was the nurses table was shifted in the center so that they can observe all the patients from there easily. In tropical countries, corridors were on either side to protect ward from direct sunlight. Especially in tropical countries, we have seen there is lot of heat and lot of direct sunlight that is coming, and hence to protect the patients from the direct sunlight, they have organized to make two corridors on the side so that direct sunlight do not come to the patients. Now the advantages, as we seen in the modified Nightingale ward, when the nursing station has been shifted to center, it was easy for the nurses to observe all the patients from the center. Secondly, less amount of distance they were supposed to travel to reach to the patients, while earlier they were having huge distance to be covered for seeing each and every patient. There were 30 to 35 cots. But here some of the disadvantages are, one is there is no privacy of the patients because they are not in separate rooms. All the patients are in the same ward and the ward is totally open, so one can see each other. And because of this kind of pattern, the patients and their relatives are also there at times. One or two attendants are there, so they go on talking. The nurses are talking among themselves at times, or paramedical staff, they are giving some orders. The doctors are giving some orders to the nurses, and at times there are multiple doctors and multiple nurses for different beds, and hence there is a lot of noise pollution. Even at night, when there is too much of silence, even a little noise can immediately give us to pay attention in a way, and our sleep may be disturbed. So that also can be an adverse thing for the patients who are admitted in a Nightingale type of ward. There are chances of cross infection from one patient to other because all the patients are lying, around 30 to 35 patients are there in the ward and all are lying in open. So all the air that is circulating throughout the ward are going to have some or the other organisms of these patients, and hence with the lower immunity level of these patients, at times they can be vulnerable to get these infections leading to cross infection, hospital acquired infection. And at times there can be constant glare to patients when it is open and the sunlight is coming directly to the patients. Now the other pattern we have seen is the Rigs ward, where the advantages usually is that there is a privacy to the patients because there are few patients in the particular ward, there are rooms in which they are there, twin sharing, triple sharing and all. Risk of cross infection will be minimized because there are less number of patients. Isolation of infection cases can be done earlier, and it will enhance the flexibility of utilization of the medical paramedical services and the equipments. Disadvantages is usually the communication between nurse and the patient is a bit difficult, as the distance between the nursing station and the part of the 3 to 4 cots are at different places. Direct observation of the patient will be difficult. Nurses has to walk more due to complexity of these wards, and there are more nurses required because it is impossible for one or two nurses to look into all the rooms to see all the patients. And it is costly to build as well as to maintain these kind of wards. Now, what are the various components of a nursing unit? Primary, you should have one bed 21 square meter. If there are two beds, 21 square, 14 square meter per person, two beds 21, three bed overall 28 square meter, four beds 42 square meter, that means for four beds around 10 square meter per patient is enough, while if it is only one bed, around 14 square meter will be required. Ancillary nursing room 20 by 20, that is 400 square feet. There should be separate medical officer's room, clean utility room, which should be 100 to 120 square feet. Treatment room, where the specialized treatment can be given, injections can be given, dressing can be done. Kitchen around 100 square feet. There should be a daycare room where some patients may be kept for only a day for minor surgeries, like nowadays laparoscopic surgeries are there where a daycare room can be used, and there is some stores for various equipments, for various supplies, for housekeeping material, etc. Then auxiliary services in the form of auxiliary nurse midwife may be there, auxiliary other facilities can be there to help and support the treatment of these patients. Sanitary dirty utility room, there should be bathroom separate and WC. Urinal, there should be one for six beds. WC, one for eight beds should be enough. Bathroom, there should be one for 12 beds so that patients can take bath. Washroom, one for 10 beds. And there should be a separate janitor room where all the facilities for this service can be kept. Isolation is not going to be very dirty look to the people around, and it will be properly maintained and separately kept. Ancillary services attached to wards, like nursing station. All the wards should be having nursing station, treatment room, clean utility room, ward kitchen, pantry, stores, dirty room for doctor, duty room for doctors, seminar room where a small clinical meeting may be taken for the doctors, junior doctors, interns, etc., or nurses. Attendance room, side room, laboratory should be available so that basic investigations like blood, urine, stool, electrolytes, blood sugar, etc. can be done there itself. There should be locker room for the staff. There should be one wheelchair available, one or two wheelchairs, and a trolley should be available, trolley bar. Let's understand one of the most important medical care services, that is operation theater. As we know, when the person is ill, acutely ill especially, we have seen some of the conditions are such where no medicines are going to help. Only surgical operations are needed in some of the cases. For example, when a person is injured, when there is a fracture, when close reduction is not possible, many times you need open operations to be done. Many of the acute abdominal conditions also need abdominal operations at times. For example, appendicectomy is needed when there is acute appendicitis. In case of hernia, in case of hydrocele, in case of fistula, fissure, etc., and in case of gallbladder stones, etc., we have seen many times there is no other way out but to operate. In many of the cancer cases where they are operable, where other treatments like chemotherapy may not help that much, or in early cases where they are operated, where it will be totally cured by that, and for taking biopsies to diagnose also, what we need is a surgical intervention many times, and here comes the importance of operation theater. Now, what are the aims of planning an operation theater? One is, we have to promote highest degree of asepsis, because here the patient is cut open, or when there is a laparoscopic surgery done also, finally through the scope the organs, human tissues are directly exposed to the environment. So unless you have got thorough asepsis and sterile condition in the operation theater, and whoever is coming in contact with that patient also unless they have taken thorough aseptic precautions, it is likely that the patient will have direct access of those microorganisms to the tissues or the organs, which can lead to infection. So, to promote high degree of asepsis, to ensure maximum safety to patients and staff who are working in operation theatre. Well, anesthesia is also one of the very important thing for doing surgeries, because naturally the patient cannot bear the cutting open of the tissues and cutting open of the skin, etc., without anesthesia. And when the surgeon is operating, he needs anesthesia, and there are gases and muscle relaxant which are going to be used at that time. So, if there is slight overdose of that, it can lead to a permanent brain damage also. So, one has to be very careful to take care of the safety of the patients, because at that time if some injury occurs also, patient is not able to get any pain, he does not know what is happening. So, the safety of the patients as well as of the staff, because many of the electrical apparatuses, equipments are going to be used in operation theatre, cautery, laser, what not. And so, one has to be very careful while using those equipments. So, ensure maximum safety to patients as well as staff of the working, staff who are working in operation theatre. At the same time, it is a scarce resource, we cannot have multiple operation theatres in a hospital, and we may need multiple operations, especially in case of disaster and all, and otherwise also so many elective procedures are to be done. So, one needs to see to it that we are maximally utilizing operation theatre, there is no wastage of time in that. So, thorough preparation, thorough readiness of all the staff and the equipment, trays, etc., which are in sterile conditions required. Ensure maximum comfort to the whole surgical team, because at times some of the neurological operations, some of the head injury cases, bullet injury cases, etc., and the cancer cases may need 8 to 10 hours of operation at times, and hence naturally it will be very fatigability is there for the staff who are operating in the theatre. So, maximum comfort level should be there for the surgical team, and some of the difficult postures they are supposed to adopt to reach the deep recesses of the organs of the patient or the tissues of the patient, to provide complete environmental control, whereby they have got laminar air flow, whereby minimal the bacterial count should be zero and all that. Flexibility of uses of operation suits, if we can use one kind of operation suit for the other kind of team of the surgery also. For example, orthopedic OT can be used for ENT, for ophthalmology, etc. If you can have that kind of flexibility, it is better, because it will help us in optimal utilization of the operation theatre. Then to prevent iatrogenic complications, because there are various drugs injections used, various gases used, one has to prevent all the iatrogenic complications to the patient.